Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a groovy party, man.
Yeah, brother, dig it. Stop right on.
All right, good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And how you doing, Sam?
It's almost the weekend, Earl. I'm almost good.
Yeah, it's almost the weekend. And we'll hold the thought after I introduce my guest. It's Friday, so that means Friday's with Sandy Williams. How you doing, Sandy?
Well, I'm okay. Friday, it's almost the weekend. I got to agree with Sam, except that I can't tell weekends.
I was about to ask you, does it matter whether it's Monday or Sunday?
Rub it in, y'all.
I have to look at my calendar. Yeah. Oh, God, it's Friday.
You know how fortunate we are that we can, you know, but that didn't come without sacrifice, right? Many years of sacrifice where Mondays and Fridays did matter.
I suppose y'all did your time. It's, yeah. It's fine.
This is payback.
Yeah. All the extra hours.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I used to work sometimes 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. And I would do that week in, week out, you know. And all those days didn't matter. You know, because back during those days, it was overtime and, you know, and all those kind of things.
Well, and also back in those days, we thought we had infinite numbers of days.
Yeah.
We really now we don't have infinite days.
No. You know, Sandy and Sam, I'm a little frustrated. I was watching the projections for the first 3 weeks of May.
You're talking about weather now?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they're all lower than what it should normally be. And then the only thing that cheered me up is I looked in the entire Midwest is going to be suffering that.
Oh, so, you know. So your misery feels better because you got lots of company?
Yeah.
People call that dog in the manger. Now, I never understood what dog in the manger meant. I mean, why it was called that,
right.
But... it's sort of like, yeah, I'll be okay if you're suffering.
Yeah. it really made me feel better.
Yeah.
When I saw the overall map.
So you are a dog in the manger.
I guess I'm a dog in the manger.
Yeah.
But to somehow think that
maybe someone can call in and tell me why it's called dog in the manger. You know, that's a mystery to me. I could look it up on Google, but I'm busy now.
So you know, I 3 more weeks of average weather under what the projected temperature is for the time of the month. But I guess if the projections are 64 or 65 and we're at 60, I can live with that.
Well, look at it this way. You can procrastinate further about when you take your winter clothes and move them to wherever it is you store them and bring your summer clothes out, you know?
Yeah. Well, then on the other hand, the guy says, well, we are projecting a little warmer than average summer.
Oh.
So maybe that somehow is going to...
A lot they know.
Yeah. but anyway, I wanted to... lot of things to talk about, Sandy. And where do I want to begin? I want to begin with this, Sandy. This is Newsweek, and it's, when will the Ukraine war end? NATO warns, be prepared for years of conflict. Years.
Well, I think a year's conflict would mean that basically Russia tries to occupy Ukraine, right? That they take a large portion of Ukraine, put military in that portion, try to control it without having a peace, without having a negotiated peace that would determine what the rights were of the various sides. And if that ends up happening, then you end up with a long insurgency, a long period of time of providing weaponry and support to the insurgents, who are apparently, you know, trying to sustain a resistance to sort of an occupying force. So that would be the only way, I think, that a battle over that defined an area could persist for years.
So can you help me understand, help us understand, Sandy, how that kind of a conflict, protracted conflict, and the impact it would have globally on everything, all of us? I mean, well, if that goes on for a year or years, it's certainly got some impact on our country.
Oh, for sure. And, you know,
economically.
Well, economically, for sure. And you know, there's certainly, at the beginning, there is an acute impact, right? Before the market, the general world market, has any chance to adjust to, for instance, the dislocation of the supply of foodstuffs. There's a great deal of food that comes out of not only Ukraine but Russia, so that the essential embargo, this sanction process of no longer being willing to sell to or buy from Russia, is going to cut off a lot of foodstuffs from Russia. But then also the battle in Ukraine eliminates a lot of production there as well. So we've got 40% of the foodstuffs that are, at least in the nature of grains, that go to the Eurasian continent as well as Africa, comes out of Ukraine, Russia. So that's a huge dislocation of foodstuffs that needs to be replaced. That's going to cause an increase in food in the near term. That dislocation is greater than the long term, when the world market maybe has a chance to adjust itself in some respects, because that the Russian foodstuff might go to India, and in India then less imports less from others, and so you begin to get adjustments around in the world market to modify the impact. But the near-term impact is quite acute. And the same is true with the energy impact and oil and gas. And oil and gas is a little more difficult, because the Eurasian continent only has so much gas, for instance, available on that continent, which is then shipped by pipeline. If gas is supplied to Europe by liquefied natural gas transport ships, that's a much more difficult, expensive process that will adjust the price of gas in the world for the long term.
So, Sandy, I was reading something, it might have been yesterday or the day before, where Russia is eyeing the farmland in Ukraine. They apparently want to have control over that too. We're really looking at a protracted situation that is not going to change quickly. I know many of us we're watching it with one eye, and maybe not, you know, with the jaundiced eye, we're not really paying close attention to it, even though we've seen some fallout from it impacting us slowly. This can have some major, and will have some major impact on our daily lives. I'm looking, the gas is starting to, prices are starting to climb back up again. I mean,
well, natural gas, you know, the price of natural gas will be up because the natural gas suppliers in the United States are beginning to ship their natural gas to the LNG docks, and to load them into ships, because the price they get for natural gas converted to liquefied natural gas and sent to Europe is higher than the price they get in the United States. So what is that? That has the effect of raising the price in the United States. Gas is now the primary feedstock, or one of the primary feedstocks, for the production of electricity. So all of our electric bills get adjusted upward based on the cost of fuel to the electric providers. And so the price of electricity is going up. And, you know, that's going to be an effect on all of us as well. So these things have a more pervasive effect in the economy than just the price for heating our house in the winter for natural gas. And the oil price for gasoline, obviously, petrol products are used for many things, plastics, all kind of other important feedstock for manufacturing.
So almost everything in this nation, In the United States, is going to be impacted and affected eventually by this war.
Yes, and you know, the posturing that occurs during war has to be taken with a grain of salt always. So the reports of atrocities, is it an atrocity that's abnormal from warfare? Because warfare itself is an atrocity. And so is it an unlawful atrocity? What are we dealing with? That all has to be taken with a grain of salt, because the people viewing it have their own purposes for how they describe what's happening. But also the duration of the war. Both sides have an incentive to talk about how they're prepared to sustain a very long war as a way to bring the other side to the bargaining table, because they're saying, look, If you think waging a long war is a good idea, we're going to be fully prepared to do that, and you better look at the tea leaves to see how that affects you if you're prepared to participate in a long war. So Russia has described their capacity and willingness to participate in a long war. So now we have to say the same thing, which sounds like we're setting the table for a long war, when in fact they might be setting the table for a negotiation.
So we've gotten and grown comfortable in this country with all the years of war in Afghanistan and Iraq that didn't really have any impact on the American people.
Of course, one of the problems we had in both those conflicts is we went in and decided we were going to create, it wasn't just regime change, we were going to change the political makeup of the country. We didn't have anyone to sit down and negotiate with in either place. We went in and created chaos and anarchy. So what we had to negotiate with was a vacuum. We had the Taliban as a developing force because we essentially created the environment in which the Taliban could resurrect itself. We went into Afghanistan because of things like the Taliban. What did we end up doing? We ended up essentially fortifying the Taliban.
But Sandy, those wars did not impact our standards of living in the country for all those years.
Yes, well, we weren't. Neither place was an important provider of stuff to the world, and neither place resulted in a massive trade sanctions for a country which, you know, while Russia might have the 11th largest economy in the world. On the other hand, it is the 11th largest economy in the world. So it's not an unimportant player. It's just a less important player than the top 10.
All right. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday.
See? Do not scare me like that, Earl. I don't know if I'd make it if it was Monday.
You know, I that's what I mean about I should put it on automatic pilot, and then I would, I don't, you know, when
last,
I started.
Last time you did that, you forgot my last name.
No, it's when I started trying to do the thinking.
Do always remember the phone number. Yeah. I have to turn my brain off to remember the phone number as well, so
right.
I understand.
All right. So it's Friday, so that means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Well, but it's Monday's with Sandy Williams, too. So I wasn't, you know, the Sandy Williams is involved in both Mondays and Fridays, so let me keep making excuses. But anyway, Sandy, I just, you know, I don't know if the American people, you know, our compassion for the war still exists, and that's going to continue to exist until we start seeing the impact on us.
Well, you know, the impact
financially.
Yeah, we're talking about, I mean, like inflation.
Right.
And the reason inflation is going to be a much bigger impact now than during the time of the 20-year Afghanistan conflict or Iraq, those were deficit-funded expenditures. So they were definitely inflationary because, you know, when you spend that much money, it's all on American goods. It's lots of it is spent in America by the government. So that has a significant growth kind of expansionist inflationary pressure. But most of it was done after 2008, or much of it was done after 2008, when the United States economy was either in recession or recovering, when the United States economy was in a situation where we had more production capacity than we had demand, which was a deflationary effect. So that kept interest rates low. We were producing oil at great amounts, and the wars didn't affect the production of oil materially, at least elsewhere. And so the price of gasoline and oil was at essentially all-time real lows during that whole time period. If you measured the real cost of gas and oil in 1975 and compared it to the price in the period 2008 to 2019, it was very low during that entire time period. And so It was a different environment. Now we've got war going on that's going to create substantial shortages in foodstuffs, substantial shortages in fundamental thing, foodstuffs and gas and oil, and commodities generally. There's plenty. I mean, people, when the USSR broke down and Russia became available to investors, it was being talked about as a commodities cabinet, a commodities cupboard full of all kinds of minerals and oil and foodstuffs. And so commodity traders across the world became very active in facilitating the movement of commodities from Russia into the rest of the world. So that all of that stuff, it's not sophisticated stuff, but it's basic stuff that has an effect on the price of lots of other things. And so now all those things are going to be going up in price because they're becoming much less available. And so, yeah, I mean, we're going to see much more effect. And the other thing we're going to see an effect from is we're talking about putting $33 billion American dollars, additional dollars.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that.
Sending that to Ukraine. You know, if we were talking about putting $33 billion into child daycare, there'd be a lot of talk about whether we should do that or not. There'd be a debate in the Senate. There'd be party line votes. But this is bipartisan. This is something the White House can float one day, and the next day the Senate will be ready to act on it. So this is going to have a huge effect on again, the American prioritization of how we spend our dollars in a time of inflation and in a time of recession. We've got lots of pressures against spending money, but apparently not when it relates to defense.
So Sandy, we've been floating on, you know, thin air since the Barack Obama years of coming in and turning things around. Great years development under Donald Trump, under George Bush. Under the first year of Biden, the economy has been booming for a long, long time. American people have gotten fat again. Living large.
You speak for yourself. Yeah.
Living large and comfortable, and even people who, you know, struggled have been enjoying these good years, and so we hadn't. It's been a while. Yeah, well, 2008. It's been a while since the American people have had to tighten their belts.
Yeah,
we
had a recession with COVID, but we had a huge amount of government bailout that really saw.
You really couldn't feel it.
Yeah, you couldn't feel it, and in fact, some people actually felt better as a result of the differential between the very low pay scales that the American process was letting them live under and the amount that they were receiving from the government to support them. You know, the government found out something during COVID that surprised them, I think, the Senate and the House of Representatives.
That the economy grew?
Well, no. That when they decided what was kind of the lowest support wage that a reasonable family ought to receive from the government, that it exceeded the wages that many people were earning from full-time jobs.
Right.
Because it turns out that states that had $7.50 minimum wages meant that people were earning, $15,000 a year on a full-time job. Really. I think the government was surprised by the number of people who were actually better off by not working at their underpaid job and receiving the support they were getting from the government. And then we have this dislocation of labor that's resulted. I mean, COVID, the combination of the COVID problems and the ability of the government to provide support for it, but then to manage how our economy comes out of that process. And then the trade war with China that created the beginning of serious fractures in the supply chain, and the damage that the now seriously damaged supply chain from not only that process, but then COVID, all of those things are creating kind of a perfect storm for a potential worldwide recession that is going to be different than the recessions we've had for quite
Sandy,
a while.
So, Sandy, let's look at the impact of really what's going to happen to many people. Our government is so far in debt that when this, recession comes, which everybody's talking about now, no tools in the box to address what is going to be a long recession because of the war.
Well, we have,
and those kinds of things.
Yeah, well, we have tools in the box to deal with inflation, okay? And but those tools that fight inflation support recession. You know, it's a yin and yang. We can beat inflation, but now we have to walk
a tightrope. We can't beat them both.
Well, it's very hard to beat inflation and not have a recession as a process, as the result of the process. And so, and we've got lots of other pressures that are creating a recession, or a likelihood of recession. And, you know, we just had a quarter in which we had a reduction in GDP, which looks like a harbinger of recession, right? Two quarters in a row of shrinking GDP, and I think that's called a recession. But then when you look behind the numbers, you find out that the reduction in GDP was really the result of an increase in the negative balance of payments. We were importing more goods and exporting less goods this last quarter. And when you import goods, it doesn't inflate your GDP. Only the exportation of goods inflates GDP. So we were exporting less, importing more. The spending, the consumer spending actually went up.
Right.
And when consumer spending goes up, you can say, oh, well, that's good, except consumer spending going up is also a telltale sign of an inflation spiral because consumers want to spend more. If they think prices are going up tomorrow, they spend more today. So one of the things that drives consumer expenditure is the fear of inflation and the inflationary spiral. So you can look at this last quarter and say, well, it's the tea leaves are mixed. Well, I look at those and say, well, the tea leaves are mixed, but it tells me that there's still a drive for inflation built in there.
All right, we got to go to the break. We'll be right back. 844-967-2789 is the number. Be right back. We only got one day.
No one likes us. I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. They don't respect us, so let's surprise them. We'll drop the big one.
It's Randy Newman. He's one of my favorite guys.
So who is he talking about dropping the big one on?
That's a song called Political Science.
Oh.
And so he's...
Listen to the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk radio station, bringing you a lineup of live talk radio every single weekday. Kick off your afternoon with local headlines and multiple trains of thought by listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Tune in for the political party that is the Devil's Advocates radio show every day from 3 to 6 p.m. right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Oh, okay.
Cartoon-like movies, but he's a funny guy. He's a good writer.
You know, we've been spending the first half hour of the show, we've been talking about recession and inflation and all those things and the war, and they're all interconnected. And I don't know, Sandy, I know there hasn't been a time in a while where we've had a major war, inflation and recession. You know, we've had inflation and recession before, and as you stated, that's called stagflation.
Stagflation, yeah, we had that in the 70s.
Yeah.
It came after Vietnam, so yeah. It was basically a little bit of the fallout from Vietnam.
But probably not simultaneously, all three of these things.
Right.
And so I want to keep sticking with that for now, because there's so many tentacles and that are coming to impact and affect. You've been talking now over the last couple of years or so when we've had conversations about the middle class and the amount of people who are living paycheck to paycheck. Suburbs and everywhere else, people are living paychecks to paychecks.
Yeah, people, I mean, Americans have always been sort of notorious as compared to the rest of the world for how much money they save and actually how much money they don't save. And so when you don't save money, that means you're basically adjusting your standard of living to match your paycheck. And what's happening right now in the world, actually, I mean, in the United States, is with a rapidly rising price of housing, more and more people are adjusting the percentage of their disposable income that they're willing to spend on housing in order to buy that house they now want. And so the percentage of money spent on housing is going up, which puts added pressure on the fact that people will increasingly live paycheck to paycheck. People who live paycheck to paycheck have a great deal of trouble dealing with inflation. The price of everything goes up. Everything they were buying in that paycheck to paycheck environment begins to pinch at the edge of what they can buy. And we're already beginning to see a reduction in the purchase of durable goods, meaning these goods that last more than a couple of years. So a durable good is like a washing machine or an automobile. And while there's a shortage of automobiles, so it's hard to tell what the total volume of demand for them is, there isn't such a big shortage on washing machines. And there's been a reduction, according to Whirlpool, I think was reporting it, that durable goods has begun to nose down, which tells you that these people are beginning to feel the pinch.
But if I'm living paycheck to paycheck, and now my paycheck is impacted and affected as it will with recession, then I'm going to use plastic. And I'm going to live more off of plastic.
Well, yes, one of the lead indicators as well is debt going up, and also maybe the repayment rate going down. So the default rate goes up. Well, the default rate is going up on used car loans, for instance. There were a great aggressive move in the direction of providing more credit for that as the price of used cars went up the last couple of years. So there are beginning to be telltale signs of this pressure. And as I was saying, I think on another earlier show, most of the medicine to defeat inflation is designed to either take money out of the pocket of buyers, either by increasing the cost of credit so that plastic becomes exceedingly expensive. Incidentally, when inflation gets really bad, like it is in Brazil, the annual interest rate in Brazil for plastic isn't 18%, it's 375%. So it can get pretty steep if you get into a truly inflationary environment, right?
Let's do this. Yeah. Who do we have on the line, Sam?
CJ from Stoughton.
Okay.
Hey, CJ, how you doing, man?
I'm good, Earl.
All right,
thank you,
go
for
ahead.
You and Sandy. Remember, I'm the angry one.
not today, Sergi, CJ. I can tell.
Go ahead, CJ.
Well, we're living in a Democrat world today. The Hunter Biden and Harris administration, do nothing Harris administration, are destroying our country. And how much damage can they do till the midterms? Well, they got an open border. They're going to end Title 42. Inflation skyrocketing. Inflation won't stop till the
interest
rates get higher than 9%. Larry Summers, Obama's Secretary of Treasury, said to the Democrat, progressive, liberal, Marxist, socialist Democrats, don't do it. Don't do this spending. You're going to cause inflation. Biden catered to the progressive, liberal extremists. And sure enough, look it. He won't end the border. He won't end inflation. And they're going to do a hell of a lot of damage before the end. We still remember Afghanistan. We still remember that we left allies and Americans behind. We're watching Russia. This is the guy that he could go toe-to-toe with. Well, he's making a laughing stock out of America. He's destroying our country, and we're finding out the truth, who the big guy is. $10 million from China waiting for the big guy.
Well,
so, Sandy,
CJ,
tell me who the big guy is.
CJ,
I'm angry.
No, let me ask you a couple of questions, CJ. The border in Mexico, I understand the need. There is obviously a need to have a controlled border. But how many immigrants should be allowed through the border in Mexico? What do you think the right number of immigrants coming from Mexico ought to be in a year? Should there be any, or how many?
Well, I believe there's a legal process already.
But you're worried. CJ,
we let you talk. CJ.
Yeah, well, there.
We let you speak.
Well, of course, there's a number, CJ. There's a number. There, every country has a under the U.S. policies. There's a number of restricted. Well, no, just hear
what's
me out.
Hey, Sam, bring him down. Bring CJ down. Bring CJ down.
CJ,
go ahead, Sam.
Well, CJ, let me a couple of questions, but I think one is, and if we have a dialogue, you're worried about there being too many immigrants coming from Mexico. So my question is, how many would not be too many? So, you know, that's the sort of the, because if the number coming in isn't too many, then the problem isn't necessarily so great. Or if the number coming in is only 10% too many, then the problem you're identifying isn't too great. But you only talk in hyperbole, and I thought if we could just talk in basics. And then, you know, the question about the Afghanistan problem and trying to tee that up as what causes the problem in Ukraine. Most of the experts who look at this are saying more that the issue is more related to what happened in Syria, and Russia was actively involved in Syria, and the United States was in a position to be involved with it, and how the world handled the Syrian problem when Russia jumped in and aided the government of Syria against its insurgents, and used gas and various kinds of processes in the war, and as well, Russia was accused in that process of running roughshod militarily in Syria. And most people look at that and say that's what fueled the possibility in Putin's mind that he could conduct the war that he is now. My view, and I think another view of many scholars who look at this, is that the table was set for the war in Ukraine in some very complicated ways that America was undoubtedly complicit in, and that America ran through the administrations of Obama and Trump, and now Biden.
So let me say this, CJ, before we bring you back up. Here's one of my main issues with you. You call, and you're off the subject that we are talking about. You know, it's not the CJ show. So CJ doesn't get to change a focus of what we are talking about, which is what you just did. So do us a favor. If you are going to call, be on topic, and then we'll let you in. But this is the last time I'm going to let you call and change the subject, which we are focusing on. Bring it back up, Sam.
Well, and CJ, I think the one thing you talked about that was on topic was this question of the Biden administration, whether it has essentially sponsored the inflation we're experiencing, when in fact, you know, there are so many causes associated with it, and some of those causes are clearly involved with the pandemic and the stimulation payments that were made during the pandemic, most of which were made actually during the Trump administration, much of it was voted on by a bipartisan vote. And most of it was pursued by Republicans as much as Democrats. Now, the question of what's going to happen to control inflation has a lot to do with what the head of the Federal Reserve, Powell, who incidentally was a Trump appointee, what the Federal Reserve decides to do, which they're seemingly taking an aggressive role in it, and as well how government expenditures are played out. And so Larry Summers, incidentally, had a lot to say about what was handled during the pandemic recovery as well. So, you know, he has worried about the amount of debt being incurred worldwide by governments, and worried about how the debt that was incurred in response to the pandemic would be handled. What he had to say was much more complicated than just an admonition to the Biden administration.
All right, CJ, and stop being a one-hit wonder. Discover some new material.
It's all facts, Earl. I addressed issues that you brought up, paying people more to stay home, inflation on day one. This president attacked our energy.
Listen. Got to go to a break.
What's the number?
844-967-2789 is the number. We got to go to a break. We'll be right back.
They don't respect us, so let's surprise them. We'll drop the big one and pulverize them. Asia's crowded, Europe's too old.
Calm it down.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And this is not just for CJ. I don't care who it is. If we are focusing on a subject that, you know, we are talking about, it would be nice if, you know, callers will stay on that subject. And we'll move around to other subjects. We don't stay on one subject. But, you know, when we're focusing on one subject, your calls are welcome when you're focused on that subject. No different than any other talk show host I know anywhere on the planet. That don't allow callers to call in and change the subject before the host and his guests are discussing it. So, Sandy, let's go back to where we were before. The last person called in, and I wanted to stick on what is going to be coming and hitting people who can least afford it, who don't have a lot of resources. I remember hearing people constantly say that a large percentage of the American people don't have $1,000 in the bank. You know,
yeah.
They own homes, right? They own automobiles. You know, and you know, some of the kids go to private schools. And all this stuff has been, a lot of it has been done through knowing how to use credit. Credit would help you live a lifestyle probably higher than what you could normally live, right?
Well, for sure. Higher than you could prudently live.
Right.
Okay. And that's been possible. You know, the American economy has had, while we do have ups and downs, we've avoided very many perilous downs. And in your lifespan, during your professional time, yeah, we did have ups and downs. We had layoffs, but people understood that the layoff was temporary.
Right.
And there was a provision for income during the layoff that was maybe not as great, but it was enough to sustain. So it was something that was sustainable. Today, there's much less provision for income during layoffs. Layoffs are by no means, most people are fired, not right. laid off. So we don't have that same kind of cyclical layoff, come back to work, layoff
right.
kind of environment. The layoff is permanent.
Right.
And so we have much less stability in the employment marketplace. And we have a situation in which people still live paycheck to paycheck, sort of the American principle of spend and hope. And so, yes, the people, many, many people in America are going to feel the squeeze of inflation. And that's the bitter pill of inflation. And the bitter pill is that the way to fix it is to take money out of reduce the amount of money available to the people who would otherwise bid the price of stuff up. And the only people who feel that pinch are the people who feel the pinch of how much money they spend. And, you know, that's basically the bottom 90% of the economy. The top 10% worry about how much they can save, how much they can put away for their grandchildren, but they aren't worried about whether they can afford next week or next month as the result of the increased cost at the grocery store or the gas pump.
So that added pressure that people are going to be feeling, there's generally a response, you know, in their homes and with their behavior and all sorts of
Well, sure.
Things.
I mean, you know, the response is added savings, right? So
sure.
If you get more prudent when your fingers get burnt on the stove, you touch the stove less. When you're short of money, you touch your wallet less frequently. But that has a double effect, right? So when you move, you can move from inflation, and when you finally stifle inflation by causing the consumer to be worried about how much things are going to cost in the future and their need to save money, you now have created the set the table for recession because the consumer's buying habits have gone down, consumer confidence has gone down, and these are the things that are the leading edge of recession. When you have recession, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy with respect to income, right? Because people get laid off, get fired, incomes get pinched, increases in wages become eliminated, and you can end up with a long-term kind of psyche that like the one we had from 1980 to 2000. So we went through it took us 20 years basically to get over the psychosis of the 1980 recession because habits went down, and it's taken us at least now 12 years. You know, it took us quite a while to get over the psychosis of the 2008 recession.
But that 1980 recession was fueled by oil prices.
Yeah, it started. Yeah. The commodity shortage that started the inflation of the 70s was the 1973 Arab oil embargo. Right. And after that, we got an inflationary psychology like I've talked about, where people just believed that things were going to be more expensive in the future, and they bought them today. And furthermore, there was a wage spiral going up too. People were getting increased wages at a relatively fast clip, so they actually believed and could afford the 13% mortgage rate that they were suffering when they bought a house.
So is it conceivable to say, Sandy, that this coming recession and based on what happened in 1980 could last 10 years, 15 years? I mean,
well, business cycle recessions don't last that long typically, although we had a boom that lasted that long.
Right.
After 2008. Because,
but that was propped up.
Well, 2008 was a recession that was, took us to the ashes almost.
But the boom was propped up.
Yes, the boom was propped up for almost all 12 of those years were involved some kind of stimulus payments almost every year during the Obama period of his presidency. But through lots of bipartisan support, there were bailouts, there were stimulants. Then we had a couple of years of tax deductions under Trump, which is another form of stimulus, propping it up. And we propped up the boom to the point of the pandemic recession, and then we had more propping.
But the deficits grew during that period of time. So it wasn't like the boom. The boom was writing in a blank check for the future, right? To deal with now.
Well, it's kind of like a family that was using their credit card for the 18 years of the child growing up, and when it comes time for the child to go to college, they've told by their parents, we can't afford to send you to college because we've got too much consumer debt. You know, we can't do this now for you. And that's kind of where we're getting at the point now, because we've got all this deficit expenditure. When interest rates go up, as we fight inflation, the servicing of that debt, you know, the interest that we have to pay on the federal debt is going to go up. And, you know, where interest has been 1% to 2%, if interest goes up to 6%, that's three times the amount of interest we'll be paying on $27 trillion of debt. That becomes an enormous burden. So pretty soon the American economy is going to begin to tell the politicians, and the politicians will tell the people, we're sorry, we can't spend any more money on you, the people, particularly if we're spending it all on our defense.
You know, Sam, we got to hurry up and go to a break. Sandy is really making things difficult and painting a bleak picture, which is true, by the way. I mean, the picture is a fact. You know, you can't get around that. That's the reality of what we are facing.
Well, I'm just saying we face a rock and a hard spot. Whether we're going to get caught, whether we get caught uncomfortably in that rock and hard spot, it's avoidable, I think. I mean, it doesn't have to happen. But the odds of us becoming uncomfortable and uncomfortably wedged is getting increasingly high.
We've got to go to a break. We'll be back. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.